Well, this morning, the sermon title is Use What You Know, and it comes out of the story of Goliath, or Goliath, is how he's apparently pronounced in a lot of parts of Africa. So a friend of mine was there and was trying to figure out who they were talking about, this Bible character of Goliath. You know, however you pronounce things is how you think of them, so I guess that makes sense. And we look at the story, and it's one of the best known in the Old Testament, I expect, known by people in and outside of the church fairly often. A Goliath, as a just as a way of describing somebody, is used in lots of places, though people necessarily know what's going on. But we remember the story as it was read for us, that at that time it wasn't unheard of for armies to select a champion, and they would fight, and whoever won the whole battle. So you didn't have to worry about all your soldiers going to battle and hurting each other. Sometimes you do with a champion. And so the Philistines, feeling that they had, a bit of a ringer, no matter what you think of whether the 9 feet is a bit of an exaggeration, the fact remains that he was immensely larger than everybody, and was probably 9 feet tall. It's not out of the question by any means. We have skeletal remains of people that tall. And so when the Philistines came out, it was a bit of an unfair battle, of course, which would certainly take the heart out of the Israelites. And so now they're in this nasty sort of cleft stick of sending somebody out there, losing, and perhaps being enslaved by the Philistines, or being called cowards, which for most soldiers, and for that matter most people, is just unpleasant. And so as they were looking at what to do about this, as it had been going on for a certain number of days, they kept waiting for someone to come forward, and no one did, which I think was probably wise, really. But at the same time, it was wise primarily because they were stuck in a particular way of thinking. That the only way to deal with Goliath would be in hand-to-hand combat with somebody who's got a spear like a weaver's rod or all that kind of thing. You know, it just wouldn't be fair. And then David shows up. And David, of course, is a tremendously interesting character for all kinds of reasons. And this is when he's still quite young. And so you have this young man showing up. One of the parts we left out is where he's being harassed by his brothers for showing up just to watch the battle and trying to show off and all these other things that older siblings speak to the younger. But what's interesting is that as David comes forward, he hasn't had the experience of having to listen to this for a while, and he brings a new set of eyes to what's going on. We frequently look at Old Testament characters just through the lens of sort of good and bad. And the good ones are attuned to God, and the bad ones aren't. I'm thinking particularly of the Israelites. And so we look at this and we think, well, what's wrong with Saul? Oh, he must not have cared about God at all. Well, I don't think that's the case. I think the Israelite army was filled with people of discernment and who were devoted to God. But they were looking at this whole situation through the lens in which they came into it, namely a battle. And so when David came, he had a different perspective because he just showed up. He's taking some bread to his brothers and just being there, and sees that this is perhaps a bit more than just a conventional hand-to-hand combat. There's something more going on, which is why he uses language like, well, God will take care of this. Like, why are we letting this Philistine call our God and us names when we know that God can do things? And so my best guess, reading between the lines, is that David was the first person who went to Saul in any kind of seriousness and said, I'll take care of this. Which it certainly explains why Saul says, no, you can't do that. You're a boy, this is a grown man, and an unusually grown man at that, who's been training for this his entire life. You'll just be taken care of. And he says, no. What you don't understand is that I have some transferable skills here, to use the current buzzwords. And when you read David's description of how he deals with bears and lions, they're fairly extraordinary to begin with. I've always had this picture of David with a sheep, and a bear comes up nowhere, because I've seen bears live. I've seen a lion in a zoo, I think. But, you know, you drive through Banff. I've seen bears, so I have some idea. And I've always just assumed it was a black bear that comes out, scoops up a sheep of some size, and runs off with it. And I've always pictured David running after it with a stick and just hitting the bear to get its attention. When he turns around, he takes the sheep out of its mouth. And as far as David's concerned, that's the end of it. But then the bear continues on. And so he grabs a hold of it by the hair and hits it and kills it. We had a very dramatic preacher when I was growing up who used to describe this when he was telling it to children. And he'd grab that bear by the mouth and he'd turn him inside out, which as a kid I just thought, wow, I still think that'd be pretty extraordinary. But I mean, what we're getting at here is that David is a bit more than just your average shepherd and dealt with things that needed to be dealt with, including lions and bears. And, I mean, that's nothing to fool around with. And so that's enough for Saul to say, well, okay. Which once again seems odd, because, well, Goliath is neither lion nor bear, and Saul is surrounded by soldiers who are used to dealing with people of various sizes. And yet none of them were willing to step forward. And so David comes up, and this is where we get to sort of the crux of the matter, what I'm really trying to get at here. Saul says, okay, well, here you go. Let's get you dressed up properly, and puts him in his armor, meaning well. And I've likewise always had this picture of this helmet that if he moves his head quickly, he won't be able to see out. Like when you see somebody putting on a hockey helmet that's too big for them, or a football helmet, even more so. You don't dare move, which sort of renders the whole point of the thing a little moot. And, you know, the tunic and all these other things just aren't working. He says, no, that's not going to work. Because when I'm out there taking care of sheep, I don't wear this. When I'm taking care of sheep, I'm dressed in a particular way. I have tools that I know about. And that's where we come to the sermon title, Use What You Know. It would make sense for David to dress up like a soldier in one way. But in another way, all of this fabulous equipment would just get in his way. And if somebody gives you things to use that you don't know how to use, they're just not helpful. And so David steps into the arena, if you will, with Goliath, completely underdressed, if the only way to approach this is in the way that everybody else thinks. But David knows something that they don't. He knows his own skills. He knows his own abilities. He knows what he can use. And so, of course, the rest of the story, it's a bit of an anticlimax once you've grown up with this, and you know, once you get past that part, you know what's going to happen next. What I always find interesting is how unaware we are of what a sling can do. I remember a sermon once that hinged on the fact that David chose smooth stones instead of pointy stones that would hurt more. And sure, they'd hurt more, but nobody knows where they're going to go. The whole point of a smooth stone coming out of a sling is it has a predictable path. In the same way that one of the reasons why you can hit a baseball at all is because you know where it's going to come. Because a baseball, being round, has a very limited amount of movement, although if you've ever been around a good pitcher, you see how much that movement actually is, or a softball. But if you have something that's oblong or that's weirdly shaped, that isn't smooth, it's useless. To someone with a sling or a slingshot. But if you have a smooth stone, and I always thought of this as a pebble, but the stones tended to be about the size of your fist. And a smooth stone coming out of a sling comes out of a sling at somewhere around 100 miles an hour. So what it is it's a cannon made of canvas and rawhide or whatever it is. And so David steps into this using the primary weapon of distance of a shepherd, which is a sling. Shepherds used slings. They didn't use bows and arrows, which obviously existed at that time, because if you have a sling, which you can make out of a wide variety of things, and you have rocks, even if they're not the best rocks, you always have weapons at your hand. The bow and arrow, you need trees and things. and you may not have those handy. So it's a very self-contained, and a sling takes up, a very small amount of space. You don't have to carry around equipment. So David stepped into this conflict using what he knew and was successful. When you use what you know, you have a much better chance of being successful in whatever it is that you want to do. And in the church, we need to use what we know. Now, in the church, we're not in this kind of conflict. We're not looking at killing people and cutting off their heads or anything, you know, absurd like that. But in the church, what do? We care for each other inside, and we reach out to those outside. And we're caring for each other. We worship together, study the Bible together, we eat together, we do all of these things together. And when we're reaching out to those around us in our community, we reach out to them in ways that we know. And this is something that I know you do already, because I see in this faith community people interested in those around them and talking to them, which is what you know. It's always unfortunate when a church sees a need and tries to fill it in ways that they don't know, that they don't understand. If you're in a community where there's lots of new people coming in and you want to connect them to a church, if you go to a seminar on how to do evangelism that doesn't take the time to figure out exactly how you interact with people, what kind of a person you are, whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, whether your spiritual gifts are in evangelism or apostleship, or whether they're in compassion and helping, if the idea comes across that this is how you do this, here's your script, go to the new people, memorize this, tell them this, whatever you've memorized, and they will come to church. And then they don't. And so then we think there's something wrong with us. Well, no, there's nothing wrong with us when that doesn't work, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to do what David first attempted when Saul loaded him up with armor, good armor, top-of-the-line armor, that didn't fit, that he didn't understand. But when David was able to resist that, to say, no, I'm not going to use these things, good as they are, because there's nothing wrong with armor. Good as these things are, I'm going to go with what I know, which is a sling, and I'm going to do what I know in the power of God. He was successful. So when we as a church know who we are, and we use what we know, that's when we're successful. Because we're also doing that in the power of God. There's nothing wrong with us as people to prevent us from singing a different style of music. We could certainly sing choruses here, worship songs, many of which are absolutely wonderful. We could probably even come up with some more instrumentalists, a drummer or two, and have a completely different style of music in the worship time. But we'd have to learn that. And why? Not that there's anything wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with any church that does that or does it in other ways. There's nothing wrong in virtually any of these things that we can do as a church, but to suggest that just because something works there, it will work here, is when we get away from this whole idea of making use of what we know. Peggy plays the instruments. I don't. And that's a good thing. I don't know how to play an organ. I have never played an organ at all. Barely played piano when I was younger. The church is a church. It's making use of what we know. We're making use of abilities in music, make abilities in leadership with elders, make use of the abilities of hospitality when we get together. All of these things, we're doing what we know, which is why this small congregation is successful as a congregation. We were speaking before the service even began about this whole idea that large churches are the only churches that can accomplish things, which isn't true. Large churches can accomplish bigger things, of course, but when you look at what's actually happening in giving to missions and connection with community, it tends to happen most in smaller churches because you're using what you know. You're ministering out of who you actually are, not out of who you think you should be. And this doesn't mean that we don't learn new things, because of course we do. But when we do ministry out of that essential core of who we are, that's when we're as successful as David was against Goliath. Because we're doing something that is or has become natural to us. When you're talking to your friends, the people you bump into, about what you're doing on the weekend, it's not unlikely that church might come up. And you're going to talk about it in ways that are authentic to you and are going to make the whole idea of church as a good thing for you and attractive to them. If you memorize some kind of speech, it's not that it's a bad thing, it's just that it's not what you know, it's not you, and it doesn't work as well. We need to use what we know. We need to use the abilities, the experience, the gifts that we have to do the work of God. We don't have to do anything that we can't do most of the time. There are special occasions when God will call us to do extraordinary things beyond ourselves, and we always want to be alert to those. But for the most part, God calls us to be the people we are in the places we are and reach out to those around us using what we know. Not using things we've read about, not trying to be people we're not, but saying, this is who I am, and this is what my church is like, and this is what my faith in God through Jesus looks like. And that's when we have an impact. That's when we minister to people, whether they ever join the church or not. But that's when we know that we're doing what we should do. Because what we're doing comes out of who we are. So as we move forward into another week, this week in particular with all of these strangers around, let's just use what we know. We don't have to say anything about our church, about ourselves, about the last 100 years that we don't know about. Let's just talk about who we are, who God is, and how those two have come together. Amen.